Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
We're going to the United States again now. America is waking up to the second coming of President Donald Trump. I'm joined by Simon Marks, Chief Correspondent of Feature Story News, Cathal Mullany, author and broadcaster, and Fiona McEntee, who's Managing Attorney at McEntee Law Group and is a specialist in immigration. But Simon Marks, to come to you first, and I suppose one of the headlines we might be looking at today is the decision to pardon the people who were involved in January 6th, and some of those people may be released in the coming hours. What has been the reaction to all of that?
Well, this was a dramatic move that Donald Trump made last night here in Washington, D.C. He had telegraphed, Claire, that he was planning extensive pardons and or commutations of sentences for those people who had either been convicted of crimes relating to January 6th or those people who were simply accused of crimes relating to the uprising on Capitol Hill that day. Remember, Donald Trump's mob was trying to halt the certification of Joe Biden's 2020 presidential election victory, supporting the president's entirely false claim that the election had been rigged against him. When the order came, we realized just how sweeping this was, in fact, going to be. Nearly 1,500 people. President Biden said that there were about half a dozen whose sentences were being commuted. In fact, I think that number is around 14, but everybody else appears to be offered a full pardon. A Trump administration official went to the DC jail last night where two inmates were released late in the evening, but the authorities said the rest of those people being held in that particular facility will not be processed out and returned to their families until later today. And that Trump official arrived on the scene, still dressed in a tuxedo, having been celebrating Donald Trump's inauguration at the various events that were taking place around Washington, to assure families that the releases will be happening in very short order. And while reporters are still, and the news media here are still trying to understand the full scale of this, we know that among those inmates whose sentences were being commuted is Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the Oath Keepers, who was convicted of seditious conspiracy and other crimes and is serving an 18-year sentence. And it appears that Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, a far-right white supremacist group, also convicted of seditious conspiracy, serving a 22-year sentence. It appears that he is receiving a full pardon from President Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So this was an effort by the President of the United States to make good on the pledge that he had made to his supporters. And even sitting behind that Oval Office desk last night, he described those 1,500 people as January the 6th hostages.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And there may be scenes today because, as you've mentioned there, there are families waiting outside some of those detention facilities for those releases to happen in the coming hours. Now, there was a lot of coverage of the tech billionaires who were given very prominent seats at the inauguration ceremony yesterday. Elon Musk, though, and there are memes all over the internet this morning, he just appeared to be in fairly erratic form with some of his facial expressions, but also at one point, Simon, he gave that straight arm salute. Some people have likened it to a Nazi salute, but are commentators in general giving him the benefit of the doubt, or what's been the analysis?
Well, I think it's very, very difficult to understand exactly what was going on with Elon Musk yesterday. And you are absolutely right, Claire, to point out that his behavior throughout that rally was extremely erratic. I mean, he came onto the stage jumping around like Tigger, you know, from Winnie the Pooh, seemed to be completely out of control of his own body at times, which immediately, I think, raised eyebrows among many of us who were watching this event that was taking place at the Capital One Arena shortly before Donald Trump arrived there to begin the process in front of that 20,000 strong crowd of signing some of these executive orders. And then there was the moment when Elon Musk thanked the crowd for propelling Donald Trump back to the presidency, put his hand over his heart, and this happened not once but twice in rapid succession, put his hand over his heart and then reached his full arm out at roughly a 45-degree angle. Now, you know, when you look at that first time I looked at that videotape, I thought, oh, he's just trying to wave at the crowd. When you see it done the second time, you realise that this was a slightly curious gesture. CNN here immediately leapt on it and said that it was a salute that had echoes of the kind of gestures that were seen in Germany throughout the 1930s. It is very hard to know what was meant by it, other than to pay tribute to members of the crowd, and whether there was any thought that went into it, given the erratic behaviour that we had already seen. I think at the end of the day, everybody's got to look at those images and make up their own minds, because they're open to all sorts of different interpretations.
Thank you very much, Simon. Once again, let's go to Cathal Mullany, who's an author and broadcaster. Cathal, you've been out and about talking to supporters of Donald Trump as they were celebrating his inauguration yesterday. What were they talking to you about? What have they been saying? And what was the atmosphere like there?
Well, Claire, the atmosphere all around Washington yesterday was one of triumphalism, I would say, and a celebratory mood amongst all of the Donald Trump supporters, as you might imagine, as he returned to the presidency, very jovial and upbeat all the way through. And that was despite the impact of the severe weather conditions with that Arctic blast blowing up across the coast over the last couple of days. But the devotion and commitment of the Trump supporters is something that really struck me yesterday, Claire. For example, in the queue, I was in the queue for a little while just to get a sense of things close to the Capital One Arena. At one point, I was standing beside two young people who had a six-month-old baby with them, queuing up to get into the arena. And then a couple of minutes later, alongside me was an elderly lady in a wheelchair with her daughter, who had travelled 4 or 5 hours to be there to try and get a look at Donald Trump and celebrate his return to the presidency. But all the way through yesterday in Washington, Claire, very evident celebratory mood amongst the Trump supporters, and a sense that well, everybody tried to take down Donald Trump, the person that they all voted for a couple of years ago initially to get into the presidency, and he's managed to return.
Well, I was talking to Patty Shields here from the Democrats Abroad a little bit earlier on. I was asking her, where were all the Democratic protesters yesterday? Did you come across any?
Very few. Came across a small little protest of about 8 to 10 people towards the end of the evening, about 4 or 5 o'clock, and that was all. I think there was a sense, certainly among the locals, that a lot of people had got out of town for the weekend with the inauguration taking place, and obviously the crowds were well down given that everything was taking place inside. But there's certainly an air of, you could say, resignation amongst a lot of people here, potentially just an acceptance on this occasion that Donald Trump is back in the presidency for two reasons. That's probably the case. One, that he's been there before, having won in 2016. And secondly, that the margin of victory for him in the November election was so decisive that many people feel there's no point in arguing, and it's just a case of accepting it now and seeing what happens.
And the Irish people you've been chatting to while you've been there, what's their take on this?
Well, it's very interesting that some Irish people involved in business here that I've met in the last couple of days in New York and Boston and in Washington yesterday as well are quite positive towards the Trump presidency. I think there's a sense maybe that under Joe Biden's presidency for the business community here that it was a little bit stagnant over the last couple of years. And Trump, even though some of his decisions that he's taken already are very controversial, definitely amongst some of the images that even are emerging here early this morning from yesterday's inauguration, Claire, the sense that Trump is getting down to work straight away and trying to get a move on some of the things that he's spoken about over the course of the campaign. But it's been pretty significant to note, certainly the Irish people that I've met over the last couple of days and some that travelled here yesterday to support Donald Trump, that they're very positive towards his presidency.
So it's all about the economy really for them, is it?
It is, and it's for the local people here as well. Anybody that I've spoken to from a wide variety of different backgrounds, a very diverse crowd there supporting Donald Trump yesterday, and all comes back to the economy, and the cost of living here has risen significantly over the last number of years, and Donald Trump has spoken about addressing that as one of his key planks of his presidency over the next little while. And certainly I think that'll be a big focus for him in the early stages of this presidency, is trying to address that and certainly to try and move the momentum in the other direction to help things for people here day to day. But as you say, it's all about the economy.
Cathal, thank you very much. Cathal Mullany there, broadcaster and author. And Fiona McEntee is with us as well. And Fiona is managing attorney at McEntee Law Group. Fiona, it's good to have you with us again. And in the lead up to yesterday, I know you were very busy dealing with people who had concerns around immigration. Now we have this promise from Trump's Border Czar to have these big raids on illegal immigrants right across the country. That might begin in Chicago. What are you hearing today?
Yeah, we've been here. Good morning, Claire. You know, it's been a pretty chaotic, I would say, 24 hours. We've been trying to parse through a lot of the executive orders that have been issued and kind of really understand the impact that's going to have on the immigrant community. But yeah, being in Chicago, we have been bracing for this to be, you know, the epicenter of some of these mass deportations.
But it hasn't happened today. And what are you hearing? Because in the last couple of days, there was a feeling that local law enforcement wouldn't cooperate with federal agents who came in to carry out this perhaps performative action. So where does it stand? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, we haven't seen anything yet, but it is obviously very early on, you know, the day after the inauguration. I mean, one thing that I just would love to just talk about is the fact that Chicago Public Schools has actually issued a statement to reassure parents, because there are a lot of parents in the Chicagoland area that are really scared to send their kids to school. Now, yesterday was a federal holiday, being Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and today was a planned, you know, teacher development day. So there was no school today, but actually the district has issued a statement really reassuring parents, letting them know that, you know, CPS, which is Chicago Public Schools, they don't ask for families' immigration status, that they will not coordinate with ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that they will not allow ICE agents access to the facilities unless there is a criminal judicial warrant that is signed by a federal judge. And I just feel like we have to imagine what it would be like to be in those parents' shoes, you know, being afraid to send your kids to school, not knowing if, you know, you're going to be there to pick them up, and you just don't know what happens. So there's a lot of fear in the community.
So clearly there is that fear that the schools could be accessed and people are thinking about not sending their children to school. I mean, it's one thing for the public schools to offer that reassurance, but the parents who are at home or at work have no reassurance that they themselves won't be picked up.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, that I think is probably the aim here, is to just stoke huge amount of fear. Now, Chicago is a very welcoming city. We are proud of our immigrant community here. We have incredible leadership from, you know, the mayor's office at the city level and the governor's office at the state level. And there's just an overall feeling and knowledge that we are enriched because of our different immigrant communities. So, you know, it's obviously a very different, you know, approach that you would get maybe mm-hmm. to other cities and states. But in Chicago, we are very proud and very, you know, we are ready to stand with our immigrant neighbours and friends. And I'm obviously an immigrant myself.
Now, when we were talking to a Republican a little later on, Jennifer Ewing, she was saying, look, there are Democrats, and 80% of the entire population will welcome this move to deport people who are in the country illegally and who have committed crimes. I mean, having gone through the executive orders, what more is proposed?
Well, I mean, this is where I think there's a big disconnect, because serious criminal, you know, undocumented immigrants have always been a priority for deportation. The Biden administration has been deporting people. The Obama administration was doing the same. So it's a myth to think that, you know, Democrats want everybody in the US, regardless of serious criminal convictions. That has always been a priority. And, you know, the administrations, even the Democratic ones, have had a focus on, you know, deporting people with serious criminal convictions. So that has always been the case. I think what we're seeing here is just this idea of like mass deportation, trying to just cast the net as wide as possible, regardless of who gets caught up in it. And I think we just need to be aware of the value that the immigrants are contributing to the US. You know, however many million there are, 12 million, let's say, you know, the vast majority of them are working, they're contributing to society, they're paying taxes. And I think that needs to be said as well.
But people who are not, haven't been found guilty of criminal offences, are they at risk if they're illegally in the United States?
I mean, I think everybody who is undocumented is at risk. And I think that's the main problem is that, you know, if they do these mass workplace raids, you know, it doesn't really matter if you don't have a criminal conviction, you're going to end up in deportation proceedings. And, you know, you may not have a basis to defend that if you don't have, you know, some type of legal mechanism to, you know, to kind of defend your deportation proceedings. And so that's the problem.
And Fiona, what he said yesterday as well was that he would no longer treat all US-born children as citizens. And I'm sure that is a big concern. And you're hearing about people who are very worried about that. So if the parent is undocumented and their child is born in the United States, previously that child would be granted citizenship. He's saying that's going to change.
Yeah, this is a huge issue. And this is probably one of the, you know, the biggest areas of concern for me, because we have a constitution here in America. And the 14th Amendment to the Constitution makes it extremely clear that people born in the US are US citizens. There's no qualifying statement there about the citizenship status of your parents or otherwise. And the executive order that was issued attempts to terminate what we call here as birthright citizenship under two different circumstances, the one that you just mentioned, but also if you have a parent who's here as a H-1B visa holder or on a student visa, and the, you know, the, let's say the mother is working here on a H-1B visa and the father is not a US citizen or a green card holder, that child born in the US will also not be considered a US citizen under this new executive order. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody should be extremely concerned that the president now thinks that he can override the US Constitution by signing an executive order. And the ACLU has actually already filed a lawsuit against
this. And that's to be expected. And many of these measures right across the board, actually, when it comes to the executive orders, are expected to be challenged in the courts, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And last time with the previous Trump administration, our firm took a pro bono lawsuit against the administration, against the Muslim ban in federal court as well, as did lots of other people. So, yeah, we absolutely anticipate it. But to me, it's just the fact that the president believes that he can override the Constitution is something that is extremely troubling. Mm-hmm.
Now, we had the Muslim ban back in 2017, where countries that were deemed to be Muslim, their citizens weren't permitted to travel to the United States. There is a suggestion, isn't there, that people from certain countries will be subject to the same ban?
Yes, there is. And there's provision in an executive order that was signed as well. It calls for a report issued, I think, in 60 days, essentially like listing out the countries that we allegedly cannot vet people from. So I'm sure we will be seeing a similar ban. And I know that from, I work a lot with international students, with universities that have professors, researchers, scholars from all over the world. And this was extremely troubling to them, even in advance of the inauguration. They were warning people not to travel because they did not want people to be overseas if and when an executive order like the Muslim ban was issued, you know, on the inauguration day. So we will be expecting something in the coming few weeks.
All right, Fiona, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Fiona McEntee, who's managing attorney at McEntee Law Group. Now, we'll have the latest on the ongoing row over speaking rights for the regional independent group in the Dáil. That's after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.